Representative Melissa Hortman is the House Minority Leader of the Minnesota Legislature. She was elected in 2004 and is from Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. Is that right, Melissa?
That's right.
Okay. The 2017 Minnesota Legislature is at a critical point. Many Minnesotans are wondering what has gotten done, what is going to happen, and she is here to tell us more about it. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So where are we at?
We are moving into the most important stage of the game, and that is the budget target negotiations between Democratic Governor Mark Dayton and Republican legislator leaders.
And how are you feeling? What do you think is going to be happening?
Well, I think it's important that all parties bring to the table a willingness to compromise. We won't be able to finish on time if people don't have a willingness to compromise. We cannot have my way or the highway attitudes coming into final negotiations. So I'm hopeful that in between the vision that Mark Dayton has laid out and the vision laid out by the Republican leaders, we will be able to find a compromise.
What is your personal involvement in these negotiations?
So as the minority leader, I represent the Democrats in the Minnesota House, and I will be part of the negotiations. I think it's important for all of us to recognize that while we represent a political party and a district, that we also represent the whole state. And so in the negotiations that we end up with a portion of the vision that Mark Dayton and the Democrats really hold dear, and a portion of the vision that the legislative leaders and Republicans hold dear. And recognize within each of our districts, we all have Democrats and Republicans and people who view things differently.
Okay, so is it your position then that you bring the ideas that your party supported in the original, when the bills were originally passed? Because this is kind of a conference committee thing, right?
Right. We're very aligned with Governor Dayton's vision for Minnesota. The budget proposal that Governor Dayton put forward in January and amended in March puts education first and would fully fund our classrooms so that teachers wouldn't have to be fired and tuition wouldn't have to be hiked at our state colleges and universities. The vision put forward by the Republican legislative leaders is to overwhelmingly put spending into the tax bill, some of which really favors corporations and people who are already super rich. But in the education area, they have actual budgets that would cause cuts to our local schools and would cause tuition hikes.
Would it be fair to say that in the philosophy between the two parties, the Democrats support public education and we're seeing more of a trend towards vouchers and supporting private education coming from the Republicans?
That is certainly the case. The Republicans do have vouchers in their tax bill, along with some corporate tax cuts and some tax cuts for the super rich. And the problem with that is the funding that Republicans propose for these tax cuts would only help a few hundred of the wealthiest Minnesotans. And the school funding that Democrats favor would instead help hundreds of thousands of children all over the state. The best example is the estate tax. The estate tax would cost about $161 million, benefit 800 families. For that same amount of money, you could provide fair funding for the 865,000 students we have in Minnesota public schools from E through 12.
Well, that's quite a comparison. Well, explain to me why the funding, I understand why funding and taxes have to be linked, but as I've watched this over the years, it seemed to me that in prior years, the funding bill was in an omnibus budget bill.
I think the best way to think about it is that the $1.65 billion surplus is like a pie, and now we have to cut it into pieces. And so the Republican pie would give 80% of that whole state budget surplus to the tax bill and leave only 20% for everything else in state government, including E-12, higher education, health and human services, environment. And so I think if we looked at cutting the pie into more proportional pieces, we could still have a very healthy-sized tax cut target, and then we could also have adequate funding for our E-12 schools and our college education. I think it's possible to do both because the state's economy is strong and because we have a budget surplus.
Okay, since you mentioned, again, education, I've looked to see what's going to happen with early childhood education in going forth on the budgets that are being proposed, the spending in the education bill. Where will that be? That's the governor's favorite thing, and I wondered how it was doing.
Right. The Republicans have proposed elimination. So not only would there wouldn't be any more schools added going forward, but the schools that already have pre-K would have to discontinue it. And I think that that is just a negotiating position to force the governor to give up something of value in order to get pre-K education back. And I think for the governor, the thing that's difficult about that is he really doesn't like seeing four-year-olds being used as a bargaining chip. That's just kind of not the way he operates. He doesn't think about it in terms of chips and bargaining. He thinks about this is in the best interest of children. We're actually behind the rest of the country in terms of early childhood education. And it seems very basic at this point in American history that we fund voluntary pre-kindergarten. So that conversation will be interesting. I suspect that the governor is not going to move from the position that is absolutely required to be maintained.
So does that means they're trying to get something else? Is that what you mean by that?
Right. For example, their tax bill, since their tax bill is $1.1 billion, it doesn't leave them enough money to fund pre-K. So they would have to reduce the size of their tax bill and their tax spending in order to take care of the four-year-olds in the state.
We're talking with Representative Melissa Hortman today. She is the House Minority Leader of the Minnesota Legislature.
When it comes, and to get bounced back here to the tax bill, things seem very, the reductions struck me, and I know this is changing fast and that I have only a layman's interpretation, so I'm looking to you to explain to me. The reductions struck me as very specific, like Social Security taxes and some other things, but I saw no increase in the working family credit, which is a big thing to some of our families that are struggling. Was I reading that right, or has it changed?
You are correct. There is no working family tax credit in the tax bill, and I think this is an area that should be ripe for bipartisan compromise. Democrats tend to support working families and making sure we have a state budget that works for Minnesota's working families, and Republicans really like tax cuts. So it seems we should be able to agree to cut taxes on those families in Minnesota who are working.
I would hope so. Many of them are probably the parents of those early childhood children that are going to be cut out by this proposal, too.
Absolutely, and parents of children who are going to higher education and facing tuition hikes. You know, in Minnesota, we have the fifth highest student debt in the nation, and that comes from the almost decade of cuts under Governor Pawlenty. We're finally rebuilding our higher education system. This is just not a time to underfund them and force them to increase tuition yet again.
No, as a grandmother of college-age children, I want to put in a word for doing something in your funding package to lower tuition costs. But I guess that's something I should say for Santa Claus, huh?
Well, you know, it's not unrealistic because we do have a $1.65 billion tax cut, budget surplus. And with a $1.65 billion budget surplus, we could do a total freeze in tuition. In fact, we could do a reduction for only $330 million. So a fourth of the surplus, we could freeze tuition at our state colleges and universities. So to reduce tuition is not unrealistic, given the incredibly healthy surplus that we have in the state right now.
One more tax question. I'm wondering about the status of local government aid. Is there any LGA increase in the tax bill this time?
My understanding is that the current draft of the tax bill does not have any local government aid. Now, the DFL tax proposal that we put together under the leadership of Paul Marcourt, one of our best members, would have a significant investment in local government aid.
Well, I would hope that would happen because they talk about tax relief in other areas, especially for those folks who are making good incomes. But the homeowner whose income may have gone down for various reasons, such as retirement, continues to pay the same property tax. And LGA would, An LGA reduction, in my mind, is a backdoor tax increase because those services that it pays for still have to be provided.
Again, seems like an area where Democrats and Republicans should be able to agree because Republicans do like to cut taxes. We do, too, as Democrats. But we really do favor local government aid as a way to do that because it does help the local governments provide the services they need, and it lessens the burden on local homeowners.
If we could take 1 minute to jump over to the Health and Human Services bill, was I correct when I looked at that and saw some areas that are not getting any inflationary increases and that sort of thing, and that there were even talk about cutting provider payments in MA?
They have made some progress in terms of reducing the cuts to providers, but overall, the Health and Human Services area would see a $500 million cut. And that doesn't seem appropriate either in a time of surplus when the economy is doing well, that we would force people who rely on the government for help to suffer some cuts. And those people are the disabled and elderly people. That's where the majority of the Health and Human Services budget is spent, taking care of people who can't take care of themselves. And for a lot of us, this is our grandparents in nursing homes or somebody who's born with a disability and has needs beyond what their family can care for. These individuals right now aren't having the best care possible because of the intense worker shortage in this field. Right now, the average direct care provider for somebody with disabilities is making about $11.50 an hour. And as a result, they can't fill the positions in this market. So we have about 8,000 vacancies. And that means people with disabilities are not getting the services they really need to live a full and complete life like the rest of us.
I think another area where we're suffering, where I don't see there being room to make cuts in the Health and Human Services funding, is the fact that in the greater Minnesota, it's getting harder to find mental health care for people. The facilities just don't exist, and that would be, I think, a good way to spend some of our surplus.
I can understand the Republican point of view of wanting to cut Health and Human Services spending because there's a frustration that the costs of Health and Human Services are going up over time. And this is frustrating, but we have to accept that we have more and more people aging into nursing care and aging into needing assistance, and that's a matter of demographics. So we can be unhappy about the fact that that is expensive care, but as a society, to just cut that doesn't seem really fair to people who need that assistance.
Well, before we go, Representative Hortman, I want to talk a little bit about what you made national media for, the speech you gave on the floor. And for me, it was a great thing, politics aside, as a female and the things that you said. But also, I had no idea that those things were even possible, that people could leave the floor. And I thought that perhaps you were just making a point by saying they were playing cards in a back room. But apparently, they actually were playing cards in the back room.
Well, it's a new mode of behavior that's really evolved under the leadership of the current speaker. And, you know, to give him the benefit of the doubt, he doesn't have a lot of experience here at the state capitol. But this state of affairs where we feel that we don't have to listen to people in the minority party, this is really something new. So this speaker had a mute button installed so he could literally turn off the microphones of the Democratic members. And the attitude of sitting in the back and playing cards and not listening to people with whom you disagree is something that, you know, leadership comes from the top, and the tone is really set by the Speaker of the House. And so after the incident, I did talk to him about the importance that we change this tone in the legislature, and we have respect for each other. At a minimum, we can't expect to enact good policy for the state of Minnesota unless we at least respect each other enough to listen.
And how has it been for you since then? Has been aftermath to that? Have people been talking with you about the speech you gave?
Well, it's incredible how it resonated with women around the world. I've heard from women as far away as Australia and the Netherlands. And here in the House, it has changed behavior. People are sitting on the floor, and they are more attentive and listening. And I think that's good, because we all can learn things from people who have different experiences from our own.
That is Representative Melissa Hortman. She is the minority leader of the Minnesota legislature. Don't forget, we recommend that if you have strong feelings on any of the bills that we've been talking about today, contact your local legislature. Legislator, easy to find when you do a Google search. Thanks so much for taking time to talk with us today.
It was nice talking with both of you. Have a great day.
Well, and I really appreciated your remark. I have granddaughters, and I thought you're a real role model, dear.
Well, thank you so much.
Happy days are here again.